Good morning. Once she was the rising star in Hawaii's Republican Party. Now the woman who was the face of the young GOP is contemplating a move to the Democratic Party. Today we'll have an extended conversation with longtime Trump critic and now former State House Minority Leader Beth Fukumoto. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich.
And I'm Chris Vanderkook. Jazz is sometimes called the sound of surprise, and vocalist Karen Allison is bringing a few of her surprises to Waikiki this weekend. And Masaru Uchino, a 2017 Milken Educator Award winner, is one of those charismatic teachers who leave a lasting impression. He's in our studio to tell us how he does it.
That's the conversation for this Aloha Friday, February 3rd, and it all starts after a look at these headlines. Good morning and welcome to the conversation. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich and happy Aloha Friday to you, Chris.
Happy
Vanderkook.
Aloha Friday, Beth Ann. Our new president is not universally admired among members of the Republican Party, it would seem.
As we are hearing and as we have witnessed this week.
Yeah.
Now, if you've been a listener to this program for the last several years, you're probably not surprised that Beth Fukumoto got in trouble with her party, Hawaii's Republican Party. For years, the woman who was regarded as the future of the state's GOP has been critical of Donald Trump. In recent weeks, she has continued to make her displeasure known, including at the Hawaii Women's March the day after President Trump's inauguration. This week, she was sidelined by her party, which replaced her as House Minority Leader. Beth Fukumoto is now considering a switch to the Democratic Party, but first she wants to hear from her constituents. This morning, we'll hear from her. Beth Fukumoto, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. Good morning.
We have talked for a very long time, and you have been pretty straight up that even when Donald Trump was having some rumblings about running, and then when he became a candidate, that he wasn't your candidate. Rumors began to circulate last fall that you were considering a switch. But when did you know, I mean, a switch to the Democratic Party, but when did you know that your position in the GOP was truly untenable?
I believe in the underdog. So I think it wasn't until very, very recently, I would say immediately after the Women's March last week, that I thought, you know what, I don't know that this is going to turn around. Even at convention over the summer when I got booed for expressing that I had concerns about Donald Trump's rhetoric, even then I had said to everybody that asked me that I thought there was still hope and I thought there was still a chance we could change it. And it wasn't until the response to the Women's March that I thought to myself, maybe this is it.
The fact that you did get booed last year during convention, was that a surprise to you, that you weren't even heard out?
It was a little bit of a surprise. Going into it, I knew that what I had to say was unpopular, but I had hope that there would be some people that would want to hear me out. I did not think that the level of the response would be as bad as it was.
With the party, as we have watched it change over the last many years, but in more recent years, was there a point in time when you saw the party being willing to make trade-offs to keep itself moving and in some position of power, at least nationally, at the expense of perhaps some of the values that you would say you more or that you align with?
Yeah. Well, when I joined the party in 2009, I had joined a group of people that was saying they were going to try to change the party, right? They were diverse, they were young, and reformers. And we all joined together and we all thought there's a chance, right? And then in 2010, we sort of saw the red wave, the first red wave sort of across the country, and the Tea Party started to take hold, and which the Tea Party was at first seeming like more of an economic movement. And that made a lot of sense, but then it started drawing different groups of people that were more concerned about race, politics, and other things, social conservative issues. And I did see the party starting to make trade-offs to make sure that they could keep power.
What trade-offs did you expressly see that began to make you wonder?
You know, even in our local party in Hawaii, I had friends that felt that they were experiencing racism, that they felt like the leaders of the party were looking the other way when people were not accepting them, or when people were treating them differently because they had darker skin or because they were a woman or whatever it was. And so even in the local party, I saw us start to say things like, well, that person doesn't represent the majority of but we're not going to confront that racism because we need everybody we can get. Things like that.
For decades, we've had this idea that's been promoted, excuse me, that if you're a Republican in Hawaii, it's different than if you're a mainland Republican. Mm-hmm. Is that still true in any way?
You know, I'm one of the people guilty of saying that because I believe that it was true. But I think that the insistence of the party, especially now that the party is a nationwide majority and holding sort of all the top offices, I don't think so. I think the pressure on a Hawaii Republican is to conform to the national Republican standard.
That was always the fear by a lot of Democrats, that somehow this mm-hmm. was being, redwashed, if you will, and that there were going to be incidences where we would see some of the things that are now causing you to think about leaving your party.
Yeah.
But as you look at the Hawaii GOP and, compare that to what's happening nationally, where we've seen this red wave, that is not what we have seen in Hawaii. We've seen many, many seats lost over the last several years.
Yeah, and it's not just Hawaii. Places that we were starting to see gains made, places like Colorado, Nevada, some other states where you have a more diverse community, Republicans are starting to see losses. So there is this red wave, but I think to say that it's everywhere and in every community is quite incorrect.
Which kind of brings us to another part of our conversation that we've had for years and years, and some would say decades. How can Hawaii's Republican Party begin to move? Because mm-hmm. having a robust Republican Party would be in everybody's best interest. Even Democrats have said that to us. And being able to have the kinds of debates that can result from that mm-hmm. and allowing, if you will, cream to rise to the top.
Yeah.
How can this possibly happen with so much dissension and the old guard having to continue to pull the party forward when many young people, younger than you now, are looking at it and saying, not my party?
Yeah. My belief has always been that there are certain things in the party that people inherently know we need to change, right? Voters see the party and know that it's not resonating with them, with their communities, with their neighbors. I don't think the Republican Party has been noticing that. That's the problem, is every time I've tried to raise this as an issue, we're not speaking locally. We're not showing local values. We're not talking about what we believe in any way that my friends and neighbors understand. Every time I've tried to change that, I've experienced incredible pushback from people who say, no, this is the party of Middle America. This is the party that we're supposed to be representing, Middle America in Hawaii. And I think people sense that. People know that there are many leaders in the Republican Party that are just trying to impose outside values on our local residents.
As you mentioned, you've been talking about that point for a very mm-hmm. long time, and mm-hmm. just saying Middle America is over there, not here.
Right.
Middle Hawaii looks a little different.
Right, right.
What are those real differences that you think that they're just simply winking their eye at or not talking about at all?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the way you talk about things, right? This whole idea when you talk about taxes, people here a lot of times are willing to pay their taxes because it's a part of contributing to community. And I think that's part of our sort of melting pot culture, is we all know you have to give a little bit. You have to compromise a little bit. You have to contribute to your community. And so when Republicans talk about taxes and no new taxes and individual pocketbooks, that's not something that resonates. Now, if you say that we're trying to, and just for an example, if you say that we need to be better with our money to lower the cost of living for all of our local families, or if you say that government needs to spend more wisely so we have something for the future of our kids, that's a Republican principle, but I'm saying it in a way that our community believes in, right?
with the Republican Party as it is now, where, mm-hmm. where many of those who have shepherded it for a very, very long time are continuing to, but there's going to come a day where they're not going to be able to. We've already yeah. seen that, you know, Sam Sloan was replaced, and others are saying, well, you know, look at the winnowing out of the party and yeah. younger people who are moving away from it because, as you've mentioned many times, it's not seemingly to, you know, resonate well with them. Do you mm-hmm. do you see a point in time where we don't really have a GOP in Hawaii? Some say we don't now, but right. in terms of, right. of actually loss of seats in such a dramatic proportion?
I think, you know, this is a low. I think it's probably close to a historic low, if not a historic low right now. You're always going to have new people coming into the party that maybe don't understand the history, and that's part of what's happening now, right? We have some young people in the party, and they're people that are new. They've only been in for about a year or 2 years. From what I can tell, there comes a point, and most of my friends sort of left after the 5, 6, 7, 8 year mark. And that's about where I am now. It's been about 8 years.
And you're minority leader as of 2012. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. believing that you could change it. When you look at some of these young people now who are coming in, who maybe have the same fervor that you had yeah. in 2009, Are you holding it back to talk to them about this? I mean, clearly this is happening in a very public forum, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. in terms of those quiet conversations, are you having any with them?
I am, and I think most people, and we had this discussion in caucus, a lot of people would say, well, you've been in it too long that you no longer believe that there's change. There's always new opportunities for change, and that's true. There is always opportunity for change. But I think what I've experienced in the last 8 years, and I served as the interim party chair too, so I've really been in it. I've seen this at every single level. And what I've seen is us go down a lot of different roads that were possibilities for change. And one of the last possibilities that I saw was to change the way we talked to people so that it resonated more with local voters in the way that I just sort of explained. And to experience pushback about that, And even acknowledging things like racism and sexism in the party, I think we have to be able to acknowledge that stuff to change it. And when I tried to acknowledge it, they just wanted to throw me out for it. And I think until the party's willing to talk about that, we're not going to be successful in Hawaii.
Meanwhile, you are waiting to hear from your constituents. Mm-hmm. Certainly within the party, you have a great voice in your favor from Cynthia Thielen. But
yeah.
as you look in your future and what you can do to bring about the changes that you see are necessary, how long are you going to wait?
You know, I'm going to see what the response is from my constituents before I set a timeline, because I think I owe that to them. That said, part of my decision making is, you know, we have some very real issues in Hawaii: affordable housing crisis, cost of living's going up. And there are many Democrats that want to address that, too. And if there's a chance that I can address that, as a Democrat, then that's something I want to consider, because at the end of the day, our responsibility is to the people of Hawaii as elected officials, not to our political parties. So I want to move things forward that's going to make life better for everyone. And I want to do that however, you know, in whatever party that's possible. So I'm waiting to hear back from my constituents before I decide anything.
If they were to say to you, you know, stay in mm-hmm. because we elected you as a Republican, but we agree with you on some of the things that, you know, you're saying and you mm-hmm. have been saying, how does that become a position for you to maintain when essentially you become persona non grata with the party, but you're there right. to represent the people who elected you?
I think I've always been there to just represent the people that elected me. So if the party ends up not liking me, if either party ends up not liking me, it shouldn't matter, right? At the end of the day, I've always said this should be about people, not politics and not political parties. So my hope is that independent voters in Mililani will stick with me, will continue to vote for me, even if the political parties or the base of either political party doesn't like me for my decisions.
There are a lot of people who believe that the Democratic Party would not only value you, but welcome you with mm-hmm. open arms because you are a younger voice that could be very helpful in being able to galvanize some of those issues. I remember a town square when you were here and Brooke Wilson yeah. as a young mm-hmm. Democrat years and years and years ago, mm-hmm. and essentially came to the opinion by the end of the show that there weren't that many differences between
We agreed on a lot of things, and Brooke and I are still friends. Yeah.
Well, and there you go. So yeah. The question really is then, can we move forward with mm-hmm. an agenda without letting the labels Republican, in your case, still mm-hmm. now, even mm-hmm. if you were to stay in the party, go forward? Will you be able to do that?
I think we absolutely can. And what has been a great byproduct of what's going on right now is that there are people everywhere just saying to me, you know what, like, enough with political parties. We need to move forward. And I think there are many places that I can agree, as the conversation with Brooke and I showed. There's so many places that we can agree that this debate about political parties just doesn't need to be taking place.
And if you had one final statement to tell the Republican Party?
We got to start addressing the problems in the party and talking openly. And if we don't do that, if we don't value diversity, then it's not going to work in Hawaii.
All right, we're going to leave it there. And we wish
you
all the best. On Wednesday, House Republicans voted 3-2 to remove Beth Fukumoto as minority leader. She's in the process of making a decision to switch to the Democratic Party of Hawaii and has asked her constituents to contact her and share their views. She represents Mililani and Mililani Mauka on Oahu.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. And coming up in the show, jazz vocalist Karin Allison joins us in our studio. But first, your backyard quiz. In today's backyard quiz, we're thinking about the prehistoric art of the Hawaiian Islands, petroglyphs. The images include figures of people, animals, canoes, fish hooks, and the mysterious images drawn from pre-contact island life. Women were often represented by an open triangle and men by a closed triangle. Some researchers think that petroglyphs are the first efforts of an ancient people to construct a written language. They're found at more than 100 sites around the islands. They're most commonly found on Pohoihoi lava fields because of the relatively soft surface makes for easy carving. You can also find them on tough boulder surfaces, though those carvings are usually only about a quarter inch deep. This morning, we're looking for the Hawaiian name for petroglyphs. We'll be back with it in half an hour. If you know, call us at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. And if you're the first one to get it right, you'll get the prize.
Hi, good morning. I'm Jan Vondrachek from Hazelden Springbrook in Newburgh, Oregon. You're listening to The Conversation on HPR, Hawaii Public Radio.
There's a bright golden haze in the meadow. There's a bright golden haze in the meadow.
Jazz singers are interpretive artists, and the best of them are able to tell very personal stories that could make you think the songs they sing were written just for them. That's been the focus of vocalist Karin Allison's career since the beginning, and it's clearly evident in her latest effort, Many a New Day. Karin Allison sings Rodgers and Hammerstein. She's coming to Waikiki tonight, and she's with us in our studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
That's such a beautiful lyric. There's a bright golden haze in the meadow.
Mm-hmm. It really paints a picture, doesn't it? You can see Curly on his horse in the play Oklahoma. It's a beautiful beautiful image.
And that's the genius of a great lyricist, the way they draw you in into a song. And you found so many different ways to interpret this particular lyricist and composer, yeah?
I tried to. I know that, I mean, the way it all kind of came about is that I was watching an American Masters program on PBS, and it was focusing on Oscar Hammerstein. And so I bought the DVD set because I'm always looking at good ways to contribute to great causes like public radio and public television. But then I went through all the musicals, and I'd seen them, you know, many times as a child. But then I thought, well, let me just start writing songs down that I thought, wow, I haven't heard this for a while. I've never heard somebody do this. So that's kind of how it came about. And how can I arrange them musically to fit my vocal style? And that's how the beginning of that was.
And to fit what you want to say.
Exactly.
To people.
Exactly. Yeah, because I think this project turned out to be a little more of a, well, it's not really a musical, a cabaret way of doing things.
Right.
I guess it could walk that line, but it's interpretive.
Well, with instrumentation of just bass and piano, it's all about the voice and what's being said.
Right. Kenny Barron and John Patitucci, two of the best in the business. And yeah. It was great, great pleasure to work with both of them.
Well, there's one song that sort of tipped me off in a way to your state of mind, and that we're going to play just a little bit of an excerpt from it now. That's from The King and I, yeah? That we've got to be carefully taught.
Actually, it's from the South Pacific.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, And it's right, no, it's all right. Lieutenant Cable sings this.
You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught.
Unusually ironic for a Rodgers and Hammerstein song, but powerful.
Right. And, you know, your connection with The King and I is really spot on, too, because it also dealt with prejudice.
Exactly.
And
so that's why I thought it was.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what really spoke to me about his lyrics. And
well, it also kind of speaks to the role of artists in a world that is disturbing to many artists.
Yeah, I think.
Where people are saying, you know, what can I do?
What can we do? And I do sing about justice issues and nature, because I'm a nature girl, and things that are important to me. It's not always, you know, a very intentional kind of thing. I mean, it is more and more, but as we move on with life. But I think first you're drawn to a melody, perhaps, or a lyric. They're not necessarily married all the time, if you know what I mean. So. But I've been writing more songs lately. I have a tune out there on YouTube called The Big Discount. You might want to check out. It's about the current state, or my feelings on it. And you gotta. I think it is our responsibility to speak out, to sing out, and then sometimes just to sing a beautiful ballad and bask in that, something funny as well.
Let's bask in another beautiful ballad. It's a big favorite of mine. Now, this is from...
This is from The King and I.
King and I.
That's right.
We kiss in
the
shadow.
We kiss in a shadow. We hide from the moon. Our meetings are few and over too soon.
You know, no one but Kenny Barron would have played the accompaniment just the way he played that.
I know. I mean, it's just a pretty simple little bossa, if you will, or rumba type of a groove. But where he places his notes, he doesn't just comp, you know, using some musical terms like He has all these little things in the middle that just propel it in a different way, which is beautiful. And I knew he would.
and yet leaves all the room you need
as
well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, there's a ballad that's not a typical moon and June ballad
right.
by any means. This
exactly.
is about a forbidden love
that's
that has
right.
to hide in the shadows.
That's right.
And
mm-hmm. Yeah, the caste system or something. Or,
yeah.
And she's a concubine and he's a worker.
Yeah.
And she's being kept by the king, but she's in love with her lover and is not able to be with him.
It's important to know the story.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when a song is from a musical, yeah?
Yeah, and these are wonderful stories. I encourage people to revisit them if they haven't for a while.
Yeah, because both of the musicals we've referred to are about, you know, prejudice,
mm-hmm.
have an undertone of talking mm-hmm. about prejudice, racial equality, finding love under difficult circumstances.
Right. And then there's Oklahoma.
Right. I'm as corny as Kansas in August.
Yeah, right. You know, what's interesting is that that's actually from the South Pacific, too. But because I played Nellie Forbush, because I know these things.
I guess I don't.
And, of course, Loretta Ablis, one of your local
sure.
heroes, played on Broadway in New York City. She played Bloody Mary, and I saw that twice. I saw her perform that twice. But I feel like, you know, I didn't take the songs that were just ingenue parts. In fact, I don't think I did any of those.
Yeah.
And I took a different it was just about the specific song and not who I wanted to be in it. But
it's very much about what you're looking at a song and saying, what can I do
what
with
it? What I can say with it, yeah.
What can I get mm-hmm. out of it?
That's right.
So more sort of theme recordings in your future? I mean, is that?
Yeah, I think it's fun for us to focus on a theme and learn more about it. For example, with Brazilian stuff, I did that. And I'll do that again, I hope, with French material.
Yeah.
With
that'd be great.
Yeah, with we have a CD called From Paris to Rio that focuses on both of those genres. And ballads, remembering John Coltrane. I learned a lot from these themes. And if folks come, we're playing at the Blue Note, of course, on Waikiki. We had an opening night last night. We're there through Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I have a wonderful band with me. And I brought them from New York and Kansas City. When I come to Hawaii, I use beautiful players, Jim Howard and Bruce Hamada, a lot. Yeah. And this time, since I'm on a four-night run, it afforded us the opportunity for me to bring my mainland players, if you will. So Miro Sprague is on piano, Rod Fleeman on guitar, and I'm playing piano as well, and Ed Howard on the bass.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, Karin. Thanks
very
much.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, and HPR has been really supportive of me and my music for so many years, and I mean from the very first CD. So
well, that's
I
going
really
to continue.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Karin. Karin Allison will perform at Blue Note, Hawaii, tonight through Sunday.
Chicks and geese and ducks better scurry when I take you out in the Surrey. When I take you out in the Surrey with the fringe on top. Watch that fringe and see how it flutters when I drive them high-step strutters. Nosy folks will peek through the shutters and their eyes will pop. The wheels are yellow, the upholstery's brown, the dashboard's genuine leather. With eyes and glass curtains, you can roll right down in case there's a change in the weather.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to the St. Andrews Schools, which includes the Priory School for Girls, the Prep for Boys, and Queen Emma Preschool.
It's no longer just science fiction. For the first time, scientists have grown human stem cells in a pig embryo. I'm Ira Flatow. On the next Science Friday, we'll talk about this groundbreaking work that might lead to growing human replacement body parts in animals. Plus, how to hunt for life when you don't even know what the life might look like. The challenges of astrobiology on Science Friday from PRI.
This morning from 9 to 11, right after The Conversation.
The Office of Hawaiian Affairs now has its third chairperson in as many months, and there's no indication that the agency's long-standing reputation for dysfunctionality will translate into a productive working relationship anytime soon. Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair has today's reality check. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
Well, it has not been a quiet week in the OHA boardroom.
No, it's not been a quiet couple of months, actually. The vote was...
4 years.
No, yeah, exactly. There's only 9 trustees, so it just takes 5 of them in order to affect a leadership change. That's what happened yesterday. 5 trustees voting to remove Rowena Akana as chair. 3 people abstained. Rowena Akana herself voted no. Le'ahu'isa, because she was the vice chair, becomes the acting chair. It's not clear when they're going to have a vote on a more permanent chair, but that's expected to be scheduled. My guess is probably sometime later this month. But as you noted at the top, this is their 3rd chair in 3 months, and it comes at a time when OHA is dealing with all sorts of things, not just leadership crisis.
We're talking lawsuits.
Yeah. And this is one of the things that Dan Ahuna, one of the trustees, said to Akana yesterday, why they wanted to remove her was she filed a lawsuit to find out more about Kamanaupono's contract, Kamanaupono Crab's contract. He's the CEO. Akana wants him gone. Ahuna called it a lawsuit. Akana called it a declaratory judgment. One way or another, it's another legal dispute involving OHA. And that was just one of the reasons that people cited for Akana's removal.
And she didn't go quietly either.
No, she had some digs for people. Peter Apo mentioned the sexual harassment settlement, got a dig in against Honani Apoliona, the former trustee who was replaced by Kaylee Iaquina in the elections. She was just, you know, sounding off. This is her last chance, really, to as chair. My guess is Rowena Akana will not be quiet going forward either. She's never been one to hold back on her views. In her defense, she felt she strongly was doing what was best for OHA. She, in particular, wants a forensic audit of its management, its expenses, and that's one of the issues that OHA will be considering, whether to have an audit going forward.
But what about the state auditor? I mean, is that what we're going to have, really, to make this agency move from soap opera to an effective agency that's representing the beneficiaries appropriately?
That's already happening. It's something that's required, a periodic review from the auditor. It's something that happens with all government agencies, and that's going to be commencing later this month. But Akana wants a higher scrutiny of an audit, a forensic one, maybe trying to find fraud, waste, and abuse. Meanwhile, Akina wants an independent audit, somebody outside of government. So one way or another, there will be an audit. But the state audit office will be going forward with their examination.
So we may get 1, 2, or 3 audits, and somehow, wherever those points of truth and converge, whatever confluence is there, that may be where the real story emerges, too.
Yeah, so there are more to come with the Office of Hawaiian Affairs in 2017.
And maybe 18 or going forward. I mean, if the past is any prologue to the future, oh, well. Thank you. Talk to you on Monday. Have a good weekend.
You too, Beth Ann. Thanks.
And we hear from Chad Blair at Civil Beat every day when he drops by with the reality check. That's a look at international news. Now we're going to consider what's coming out of Hawaii Public Radio's newsroom as we go into next week. And to help us do that, Bill Dorman, HPR's news director, is here with a rundown. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
A perennial issue. We're going to talk about affordable housing.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those topics that there are so many ways to discuss this, and there are so many threads to this, as with a lot of stories. But next week, both in terms of the legislature, in terms of the IGA administration, it's affordable housing combined with, if you add in rail, which brings in transit-oriented development, and then you add in state-owned land that is located along the projected rail line, and then you look at the possibility of affordable housing and policy moves to encourage that development, that adds, again, a whole new mix to that. And again, within this legislative session, as you know and have been covering, money is such an issue in terms of planning and putting out ahead. And while everyone can come to agreement on general concepts, when it comes to the money bits of what specifically you're going to attach, that's when a lot of this becomes more complex. And we should be hearing more about that next week. And Wayne Yoshioka is going to be tracking that down.
Very good. And now what about some help for entrepreneurs in our state?
Yeah, exactly. So the High Technology Development Corporation, it's a government agency in the state. It's one of those agencies that people who know about it know a lot about it. Sometimes people are not as familiar with it, but it's one of the things that our tax dollars pay for. And you've talked about them on this program and elsewhere. They're hosting a week-long workshop next week on how to think like an entrepreneur. HTDC has some big goals. They want to create 80,000 new tech and innovation jobs in Hawaii. Again, the specifics in terms of how to get there. But as with so much of this, too, what is a starting point? And so next week, we're going to be hearing about that, helping to train and develop a workforce along the way as well.
We'd be remiss if we didn't take a look into arts and culture coming up next week. What do we have there?
Couple of familiar names. Antonio Salieri, the Italian composer, worked late 1700s, early 1800s. Incredible teacher. A lot of people don't realize he taught Beethoven, Schubert, lists of others. But in popular culture, you think Amadeus, you think Mozart's rival. And a lot of people think that he got a bad deal, a bad rap about that. Another familiar name, Joe Moore, among those who thinks that. And he's got a program a little back, while back on HPR, did a program on that. Now he's taking this in a different direction. Maligned Master, setting the record straight on Salieri. Noe Tani Gow is going to be doing a preview on that because he's going to be working with a different group here in terms of music and putting that together in a different way with the Chamber Music Hawaii.
Well, that's good news because it always seems to be that when we get something that comes out of pop culture, if you will, there are always these, you know, fungible facts and timelines and people who walk away thinking, ah, that's the truth. And that happened a great deal with Amadeus. And nice to have the record set straight.
Creative license.
Yeah. We hear lots about that in the arts, but sometimes it's a very good thing. That's going to do it for what's coming out of our news department, at least for the moment. Stay tuned. There will be more. And thank you very much to Bill Dorman for joining us, as he always does each Friday.
You bet.
And as it is a Friday, it's time for us to take a look at your letters, posts, and email. Now, following our conversation with Senator Josh Green about his initiative to treat and fund homelessness as a medical condition, India Page in Hilo agreed with him, saying, quote, Hawaii can be a leader and a precedent setter for a possible solution to homelessness.
After our conversation about harm reduction efforts in Hawaii, community health outreach work to prevent AIDS tweeted, thank you, Beth Ann, for a great segment on law enforcement assisted diversion, our lead. We need lead in Hawaii. And following yesterday's show, Alex Harris tweeted, it was a thoughtful discussion of Hawaii teacher retention matters with the UH College of Education's Dean Young.
About the program in general, Jerome Sullivan of Hilo shared, what an intelligent and interesting, informative show. So pleased in East Hawaii Island to be able to hear and take part in our conversation and our ohana. Proud to be a sustaining member. Mahalo.
Commenting on the station, Mark Hamamoto wrote in to say he enjoys the music of Seth Marco, John Allen, American Roots, and The Conversation, the main reason I support. Would like more community-based and community reporting, diversity of views and opinions to have a voice on the radio, more grassroots participation. Thanks for the letters. Our talkback line is 808-792-8217. Our email is talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
Aloha, I'm Steve Shiraki from the Hawaii State Department of Education. You are tuned to HPR2 Hawaii Public Radio. Continue the conversation with us by following us on Twitter. Our handle is @HIConversation.
In today's Backyard Quiz, we got to thinking about petroglyphs, the mysterious prehistoric art that's found throughout the Hawaiian Islands. Some petroglyphs on the island of Hawaii are thought to have been created around AD 500 and look very much like those found in the Marquesas Islands. They're found on lava fields, on cliff faces, limestone shelves, and in lava tubes. Images of men, women, canoes, and weaponry are common, along with a number of symbols researchers are still trying to decode. When they were carved into relatively soft lava surfaces, early artists used a hammer stone combined with a sharp-pointed stone to cut a series of dots that were later connected. Another method involved smashing a stone against the picture area. Sometimes a sharp-edged rock was used to scratch the picture into basalt. Some sites throughout the Hawaiian Islands have petroglyphs numbering in the hundreds. We asked you for their Hawaiian name. It's Ki'i Pohaku. Ki'i means image, and pohaku means stone.
And sorry about that. Didn't mean to cut you off. But, you know, Noah Lincoln called us from Kona, knew that answer, and Bill will be receiving a prize. If you have a quiz question for us, you can always send us it. Send us your backyard quiz to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org, and you just might hear it on a future show.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Achieve 3000. The 2017 Literacy Leadership Conference and student celebrations are February 6th through 9th on Kauai, Maui, Hawaii Island, and Oahu. Achieve3000.com/Hawaii.
There's no single formula for success in teaching, but great teachers do seem to have several traits in common. Past students never forget them and often tell of the ways they coaxed them into giving more than their best, finding new resources within themselves. Masaru Uchino is a third-grade teacher at Momilani Elementary School in Pearl City and a 2017 recipient of a Milken Educator Award. He's with us in our studio. Good morning, Masa.
Good morning. Thanks for having me today.
I guess if there were a formula for being a great teacher, everybody could do it, right?
Oh, yeah. I think to a certain degree, teaching is an art form. Everybody has different talents, but I think once you're in the classroom, finding your talent and how to reach students, using your strength is most key, I guess, to honing your art as a teacher.
Well, I was thinking about I've been lucky enough to have a couple of great teachers, and they definitely got more out of me than I thought I had in me. And that's, you know, how can you give more than your best, right? It doesn't make sense, but somehow it can be done. How do you get to that?
I think, reaching kids, individual intelligence, whether it's, their strength in mathematics or in language or in art or in physical fitness. Once you tap into that and you have a wide range of activities that you supply to the children, you show them that they can integrate, different curriculum areas and highlight their own strengths and abilities. So I think us as teachers is a matter of figuring out, in a classroom full of, 20 to 30 children, what their strengths are, and then really trying to pull in all the tools that we have in our tool bag to reach all of those strengths that they do have. I think finding each kid's strength is the challenge, but once you find it, then, it's just the sky's the limit for each child.
Which comes from a recognition, Masa, that there's no single yardstick for intelligence, right?
Oh, no. I mean, every year people ask me, how are the kids? The issues are the same, but the children are all different. And every day we walk into this classroom, there's, in my particular classroom, I have 27 kids with 27 different personalities, 27 different backgrounds. And it's hard for me to pinpoint each and every kid's, issues for that day. But, trying to keep us all at the same level definitely, allows some kids to shine more than others on certain days, but everybody has their moment to shine.
You refer to the tools in your toolkit. What are some of those?
Some of the kids, you really will admit that they like one subject more than another. When we do ask them which is their favorite subject, some kids will, say, of course you have the kids that say, oh, recess or PE is their favorite. but the kids who are stronger readers, it shines. And when when you have, you know, an activity in math where they may not feel as confident in math, but if you're, you know, writing a story that has to do with math, or if you're doing an art project, you know, for the math, that, you know, the student who may not be so strong in their math, but they're good at the art, can apply their artistic ability, you know, to a math assignment. And, you know, that's when, you know, these different, you know, range of activities that the children do really, you know, helps them to, you know, look forward to, you know, okay, what activities or what interesting thing can I do today using my strengths? So definitely, I think, you know, the kids look forward to the challenge.
And the age at which you get your kids, they're very much, they might not know they have any strengths. They certainly wouldn't be likely to know what those strengths are, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, some kids don't realize, you know, where their strengths are until they actually succeed at something. So definitely giving them a wide range of activities to do, whether it's in science or in social studies or, you know, in reading and writing. Once they, you know, challenge themselves and they see, you know, oh, I can do it. You know, I'd never tried reading such and such book, or I've never tried doing algebra before. But once they see, oh, I like it, you see those light bulb moments where their eyes widen and they get excited about that. Definitely, that's what we as teachers look for every day.
So the trick is to find with every child something they can be good at, because that tends to pull them along in a lot of other areas.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think oftentimes the children come into the classrooms thinking each subject is separate, that they can be a good math student, but they're not so strong at reading. Mm-hmm. But I always tell them, you know, oh, you have to be good at all subjects, because, you know, all subjects are somewhat related. You know, you can always apply math to social studies and science concepts, and you always need to use reading and writing, you know, for mathematics as well. So I think they learn that, you know, at a very early age, that all their strengths aren't independent. You know, they just need to use their strengths as well as their weaknesses to complement, you know, their learning.
One of my memories of my educational life is finding out that subjects that I thought I was going to hate were actually fun. You know, I remember being fascinated by physics. Who thought that would be fun, right?
Well, in our class now, for me growing up, I told the students I never understood quite completely the concept of social studies. My vision from the past was it was just history and like a bunch of facts and figures and dates. So mm-hmm. it wasn't very interesting to me. So I really had to explain to them that we think about the word social studies. It's the study of how people get along. So we talk about communities. This year we're working on a pen pal project. And I told them that, you know, by dealing with other people and learning about different communities, even here on the island of Oahu, you know, the social studies isn't only about history and about facts and figures and dates and presidents. It's also about, you know, just living as a person and learning how we are as humans and how we learn and how we interact with others.
And history contains, you know, it's great that history is getting away from the facts and figures approach, because there's so much to inspire in the study of history, yeah?
Well, I think now, you know, with so many changes, I tell them, you know, the world is constantly expanding. So, you know, we're writing history now. And so, you know, of course, you know, we're taught to learn from, you know, those before us. So it's definitely important for them to know where we've come from, especially, you know, here in Hawaii with such a deeply rooted culture and history here in these islands. You know, I definitely tell them that it's important to know where we came from, but also to look forward to where we're going.
Well, congratulations on your award, and may you continue to inspire many students in the future. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me today.
Masaru Uchino is a third grade teacher at Momilani Elementary School in Pearl City and a 2017 recipient of a Milken Educator Award.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Hawaii Pacific University and Ulupono Initiative.
Hi, this is DJ Mr. Nick, host of Bridging the Gap. One of the things I love about the islands and Hawaii Public Radio is diversity. At HPR, our goal is to bring you a variety of viewpoints from voices you might not have otherwise heard. Public radio lets them speak for themselves so that you can draw your own conclusions. It's smart, like you, and listener support makes it possible. Become a member today. Renew or increase your contribution at HawaiiPublicRadio.org. And thanks.
Beth Ann Masaru Uchino told me a great story about his third grade kids. He said he asked them, how high are my expectations? Raise your hand and show me how high my expectations are for you. And he said all the kids stick their hands up as high as they can possibly go.
If only every kid could feel that way.
Yeah.
You know, and earlier today you talked with Karen Allison, and you played a little bit of a song. You've got to be carefully taught.
Got to be carefully taught
and,
to hate.
Yeah, and if ever there were a theme for our times.
Exactly.
Give that one a listen.
Yeah, exactly. The whole idea that in our natural state, that the natural state of being is a loving one.
That's a really loving one and a curious one and full of wonderment at the world, as we heard from the teachers that we have talked to, not just Masao, but others.
Exactly.
And we're enjoying hearing from you, too. Now, next week, for most families, it's what happens at home that makes for a happier life. And as we get into next week, we're going to be talking more about the changing influence of media on sex, the opportunities, solutions, also challenges facing kids and teens, what parents can do. Justine Finn, the director of RelationShift, will join us. And we're going to sit down with award-winning microbiologist Dr. Brett Finley, author of Let Them Eat Dirt. Love that book.
And Willow Chang will sing Songs of Love live in our studio.
As we always say, you can get in touch with us anytime you like. Call our talkback line and leave us your comments and your name and your town at 808-792-8217.
If you want to hear today's show again, get another past show or links to more information, go to our conversation page on the HPR website, HawaiiPublicRadio.org. Our executive producer is Beth Ann Koslovich.
Lillian Song produces the program. Ryan Finnerty and Russell Subiono are our production assistants.
And the Backyard Quiz theme was written for us by John DeMello. I'm Chris Vanderkirk.
I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. Have a great weekend and join us back here on Monday for The Conversation.